Understand one right, and beginning the visit with Suzanne, with Rick. Thursday after supper, the 12th of October, 72. Channel One Right, and beginning the visit with Suzanne. Suzanne's report is Thursday after supper, the 12th of October, 72, with Rick. Channel One Right, Suzanne report is Thursday after supper, the 12th of October, 72.
Now that's, how long has that been?
That, he wrote that letter while we were in Texas. Because we'd all come back with our tales of how bad Uncle Lewis was and how much he missed Beauty. Because when we were there, he looked like he's about to, he had one foot in the grave. And he kept asking for Beauty. Aunt Sally said, he'd wake up in the night and call for you, just real loud. You know, she said, think the neighbors could hear it. Just call for him over and over again. Well, you couldn't go down. Well, you didn't have the time to go down or whatever. Anyway, so he wrote Uncle Lewis this letter. It was a three-page letter. On legal-sized paper. Because that's what they write down all their lists and everything. They keep these pads in them. And he had to do it in pencil. They couldn't find a pen on the place. He had to use pencil. And it brought Uncle Lewis, when I saw him last, right down there, he was alert and he had good spirits and he wanted to talk about the place in Georgia. And go over the letter again, you know, everything Bue had mentioned, ask us about it, too. And Bue just sat down, and, you know, 3 pages isn't that long, but he just put down all the things we'd done this summer. He built the barn, and how long it took, and how big it was, and about using the lumber off the shack, things like that. And he talked about the garden, about when they put that in, and how quick it came up and started to produce vegetables, and how many quarts of beans and cucumbers and everything Nell had put up out of the garden. And he talked about the chickens. And said there's the Rhode Island Reds, and they're about big enough to start eating. And he wrote, they hadn't quite started eating yet. And he talked about building the pen farm all, and then he talked about their plans for the house, you know, to build a new chicken pen behind the barn and build a house and just kind of put in everything that they've been doing.
You didn't read the letter, but you didn't need to.
No, they told us, Nella told us that you had written this letter. And then when we got down to Orlando, Barbara talked about, she had read it, Uncle Lewis, because it was written in pencil. And their eyes aren't so good, so they couldn't make that much of it out. So she was there when it came, just, you know, coincidentally. And so she read it to them, because she could, you know, see it there. So she talked about how much Uncle Lewis had enjoyed having that letter. And he just sat there, and even for the first time in weeks and weeks, he'd shown a little life. And he said, he started asking her if she'd seen it and what the barn looked like, and what kind of road we had going up to the barn. And then when we got there, Aunt Sally talked about the letter and said how glad they'd been to have it. And Uncle Lewis went through the things you had mentioned in the letter and checked us on it. You know, like, well, what kind of pump is Bue putting down? And some of the things that Bue hadn't written about, you know, and that's, they're all concerned about the cold weather. And they want to know what Bue had done about putting in pots. And he says, up by Moultrie's, one time my faucet just froze and broke right off. He says, did you figure that in with this, putting his pump down and everything? He wouldn't know how deep the well was. And,
that was his language, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's what he wanted to hear.
Yeah, they had been keeping it from him, afraid it would worry him to know that Bue and Nell were leaving Coco to go up to Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
So they hadn't told him for, it's been 2.5 years, if not a little longer.
How long has it been in their mind?
That's what I mean. It's been about two, I think they bought that land about 3 summers ago now. Because they bought it the first summer after we were married.
Oh, that long ago?
Maybe. Well, now they had it last. Yeah. The end of summer, 2 years ago.
Gee, I didn't realize that long.
It's been a long time. They got it. They got it the summer Jim and I graduated our bachelor's. You know, they came to graduation and they congratulated us and started talking about the
place. I remember you said
that. That was the time they came out here and you were still talking about it. That's when they first had it. And it was a big secret. Uncle Lewis wasn't to know because it was worrying. And then when he did find out, I don't think it worried him in the least. He just wished he could be up. Uh-huh. And he was telling Jim kind of things to do about the pump. He says you have to, you know, it'd be better to bury those pipes leading from the pump to the house about 18 inches, maybe 2 feet deep. He says you can't put them 6 feet, 6 inches around here like you do around here. And he asked Jim how the chickens were and whether they had started laying. And he said, now you got to keep a rooster with them. You can't eat up all your roosters because they'll lay better. He wanted to know. We said that we hadn't got the road up to the hill, up to the barn, fixed yet. It was still, if it rained, you couldn't use it. And so he had a case himself where he'd driven from Moultrie into another town on a clay road. And he said he started 8 and it took him till 11 o'clock and it was only about maybe 40 miles or so. And the whole time he said we just slipping and sliding the whole time on that wet clay. So he's, you know, he's from Georgia. I mean, they were all born and raised there, and that's, I guess they still think of it as home. And the view going back there is just something they can share.
Yeah.
And now Ira
Lewis is old enough to have it in his blood.
Oh, yeah. Even more so than View, I think, because he did some farming, and View never did. And the other brother, they say, the minute they tell Uncle DeLaws, if they once invite him, he'll come up there on the bus anytime he feels like it. He doesn't think anything at all of going from, well, Bassett up to Michigan to pick cherries, you know, if he feels like it. And he's 72, older than Uncle Lewis. And he'll be right up there in Georgia. He'll just hop on the bus and look who'll come.
But, even with all his gardening.
Yeah. Pearl won't come. His wife won't come, but Uncle DeLaws will come.
Oh, she'll stay there overnight.
Yeah. And he'll come. But, you know, he doesn't write very often, but when he does, it's always, you know, to me, I've still got that other letter he sent us, you know, where he listed out the things Jim and I could do when we were up there over Easter vacation.
Yeah.
And he'll print it, you know, and I can just imagine what that letter must have looked like. You know, written in dull pencil.
Printed.
You know, with the pencil you can see it better if it's printed. He writes all the lists he gives us. He prints it, you know, so we can see it better.
Be sure you won't make a mistake.
Well, it's been sort of a busy time for you. He has to keep things going up there, too.
Oh, yeah, he keeps everything going. It's just, you don't have to sit around and wonder what you're going to do next. Because if he sees you sitting there, he'll think of something. You don't have to do it. He just kind of put it, couch it in the terms, you know, like if you have time or when you get something, you know, don't have anything to do, or if you just, you know, don't want to fiddle with it or something, you might do this. Take some water, jugs down, get some water, and maybe go rake up some of the weeds he's cut. And, you know, just something to do. And he, see, when he gets up in the morning, it's real early, and he lights the fire.
Oh, yeah.
So he can get, it's just one of those old pot-bellied iron stoves, sitting right out there in the middle of the room. You know, it's just this long, 36 long, 12-foot wide room. And they've got different parts of the walls painted different for when they put in the partition. Nell tried a new decorating trick. She'd read that if you painted one wall of a room a solid color, bright or you know, dark. And the other side, white, it made the room look bigger. So she had a royal blue rug that her brother's given her. So she found some tape to match. And when you walk in and look down at the end, here's this royal blue wall and the rug next to it. And she said she's going to paint the other wall and leave one wall white. And Bew came in and he looked at it and he said, "That's awful blue, isn't it?" So she didn't paint the other wall. She just got the one wall blue. But they have the blue wall down at the end with the rug, and then they have the whole middle section where the kitchen and the studio couch and the kitchen table, that's beige, or sort of light tan color, with contact paper behind the sink and along by the stove that she got the other day, and she agonized over that. We went in and we looked at six different stores looking at contact paper, trying to figure out what color would look best in that room, because the couch is red, kind of an early American type print, and the table's red, and the rug's green, you know, and it looks all right, but she wondered, what kind of contact paper do you use? And she finally settled on a orange and yellow and kind of gold print that mixes in with the wall pretty well. Well, once she got that up, you know, she just sort of relaxed again. She'd gotten something done on the house. And the other end is painted white, and it's got an orange rug, and Bew had started to paint the ceiling. You know, it's just the plywood floor, and then you can see the studs and rafters up there. And he started to paint, and he painted that, and then he quit. It was just too much trouble to paint that entire roof that way, you know, because the paint drips down your arm and everything. He decided, after all, it was only a barn. It's only a barn when he gets tired of working on something. The rest of the time, he just takes infinite pains. Anyway, he gets up in the morning, and you can see the light go on because it shines up in the loft through the cracks. And he gets the fire started. It doesn't take any time to get it warm. And then you hear him sitting down.
But the windows open up there, you said.
Yeah, that's right. The windows are open. Two windows. There's five of them. And they keep two open all the time. You know, because in order to open or shut them, you have to go outside and get on the ladder because the screen is solid inside. You know, and so you have to prop the window open outside. Anyway, so they leave one open, two open. And they get that room up to 80 degrees in no time at all. You know, just that real small area. It's insulated. That thing.
Pot-bellied stove?
The pot-bellied stove. Now, of course, it's only, you know, anywhere from 39 to 48 degrees in the morning. That's what it's been lately. So, you know, if it gets too hot, they open the door and leave it open until it cools down. Anyway, you can hear them talking down there. They drink coffee. Now, if she doesn't have a cup of coffee in the morning, I think she gets a migraine headache or something. But they just sit there and hear, and they're both kind of slow and sleepy, and Bew just sort of, you can hear him. He talks about what they might do that day, and is it time to wake Faye up yet? And you hear him get her breakfast and get her off, and she has to hunt for the flashlight, and she calls the dogs to go with her. And he just sits there and he talks with Nell and figures out what they're going to do that day. He's going to put the post in for the new chicken yard over on Pork Chop Hill. This is the part he almost burned down. And maybe she can get Jim to go down and kill her a couple of chickens and she can stew them up and have chicken and rice. You know, he even plans a meal sometimes. You know, that's not always what she decides. He gets hungry for something, he'll suggest it, and he cooks it, you know. So he'll think of that, and he'll say, well, Jim can go down and maybe pull off some of the boards in the shack, and if Suzanne doesn't mind, she can probably go down and help him pull the nails. You know, so while I'm waiting to get up in the morning, I hear our whole day being planned.
I keep waiting to get up in the morning.
You know, because Jim sleeps right too, but I like to be awake. It's dark and it's cold, but it's real neat. You know, you hear all this noise downstairs.
And smell the coffee?
Yeah, the smell of coffee. Yeah.
And bacon?
No, the bacon comes later. He waits breakfast until Jim and I are up. As soon as it gets light enough, you know, Faye meets the bus at 7 and it's still pitch black. But as soon as it gets light, he goes on his rounds, he calls it. The two dogs they're overjoyed in the morning. They, you know, they stay in the barn at night, except Red. Anytime he smells or sees a leaf move, he goes out and barks at it for a while. You know, about every 30 minutes you hear him. He's got enormous lung power. And the puppy says something there, and she sort of. And Red goes out and he chases whatever he sees, you know. So they go with you, and they play all the way down the hill. And they play while he opens the gate and gets the flashlight. And they play all the way to the chicken yard and chase each other. And he lets the chickens out, gives them water and feed. And they play up there until Bubba comes around. You feed him in the morning. He just, you know, he's up and around, and Bubba's waiting, so he just puts feet in the trough. So the dogs play and keep an eye on Bubba so he doesn't step on them or anything. And then they, I forgot what he does. Now he goes to the garden and he checks that, see if any okra's ready. They come back and you can hear him tell Nell that maybe she ought to go down and cut the rest some more okra today. You know, dogs play the whole time. If anybody comes out in the morning, they, you know, you just have this kind of menagerie following. He says they knock him down. Sometimes they get playing so rough they'd come up and hit him behind the leg. Just roll up against him, about knock him over. And so he comes back to the barn, and he, I know what he does then. I usually go back to sleep while he's gone. And the next thing I know, you can smell the bacon. And I know we've got about 15 minutes. And Jim gets up, and then I get up. We go down. It's cold. It's so cold getting dressed in the morning. You know, you just sort of shiver while you pull your clothes on and rush down and get in front of the stove down there. And after that, after breakfast, they just let the fire die out because it's warmed up by then. And you go out and do whatever he's free to ask you to do. But he doesn't free out much for me. He fixed up that desk for me as soon as I got back. He saw me typing on a chair, you know, and he says, I'll get busy and fix you up something. And he did. He fixed up. He got this metal sheet and tacked boards around the side, and then he put legs and braces on it and an army blanket over it so it wouldn't rattle, and set the typewriter on it. And when I came back, about an hour later, there was this desk by the door, that top door, where I'd get plenty of light, and he'd brought a chair over from the far end, stuck it up there with my typewriter and everything. All ready to work. So,
in the log.
Yeah. And he had Jim building the doors for the back of the barn to keep the north wind out, you know. At least he had one set of doors you could cut the reeds pretty well. And so he'd go down and he and Nell would do one or two things. He would go down and he'd cut briars, blackberry briars. She'd rake them up, or he'd go to the shack and pull boards, and she'd pull the nails out. And, you know, she says what he does, she wants him to work on the inside of the thing, fix that up where they're living, because she gets sort of tense, because she wants to do so many things in there, like put up shelves and finish painting and put up partitions and get those fixed up and view. Is going to wait until he can't do anything outside before he starts working inside. Well, that's going to be nice. He's going to have to be inside. Here's going to be all this hammering and sawing and everything going on, too. But anyway, he says he'll work one thing. When he gets tired of that, he's got something else he can do. And I think that's one reason he's so happy. There is no end of things he can do. You know, he'll work maybe all morning on one thing, and then the afternoon he'll find something else. And it all needs to be done, and there's no big rush to it. And he just takes his time to work.
But he keeps moving.
Yeah. The only time he sits down is at night after supper, when it's dark and he can't do much else. And then he comes in and he listens to the radio. Or, you know, reads the newspaper if we happen to have one, or looks at the Sears catalog, or plans something that Nell can do in town the next day. Yeah. And that's about the only time he's not doing anything. And of course, Nell is busy all the time. She never lacks for anything to do. Of course, most of hers has to do with cooking.
Three meals.
Yeah, three meals. And believe me, when you cook chicken, that's an all-morning job.
You don't just take it out of the freezer.
No, you don't take it out of the freezer. You get Jim and Butte to go down and chop the heads off, which Butte hates. Eyes is having to do that. He really doesn't like eating the chicken. And Jim came up and he says, you know what Dad decided to do? He wants us to put an ad in the paper and sell those roosters, you know, instead of eating them. Because he doesn't like killing them. Doesn't bother anybody else. It bothers Jim. He says, it's not so bad once a day. He says, but picking one out is what's hard. So now he wants to sell them. All the best ones. All the choice ones. Anyway, so they kill one. They kill two at a time. And they give Nell plenty of warning. She gets a big old pot boiling on the stove with water. And then she carries that outside and puts it in a bucket. And when they bring the chickens up, she dumps the chicken in the bucket. And the kittens, you know, immediately, the minute they see one Jim coming up the hill with those two chickens, you couldn't pry them away from the, you know, the bucket because they know what's coming. They're going to get a lot of chickens again. So, anyway, I helped them one day. We dumped the chickens in the bucket, you know, scald them, and then they're real easy to pluck. But you have to let them cool a little bit. It's kind of hot. So we pluck them and pull out all the pin feathers. And she skins them because the pin feathers are a little hard, pretty hard to get out. And then she, you know, cleans them. They found out that they're a little tough when you fry them. Because they run around all the time, and so they've gotten real tough.
Oh yes, yes. Yeah, they're cooked by that if you just get them in a cage.
Right. See, the people who raise the chickens just have to sit in one place and eat.
Yeah.
But these, you know, they get to fly out of their coop and run around all day.
That's the same way with calves.
Yeah.
They don't want to run around.
You want to sit there and get what? Get heavy. And she says, this chicken, where she tells everybody she can, they are the longest legs things you've ever seen in your life. She holds her hands out, the legs are that long. Sometimes you stretch them out. Just real long and lanky looking birds. So usually she stews them. She either makes chicken and dumpling, or she'll fry it and then she'll cook them in gravy a while, or she'll fix them. She just boil and serve it with rice and green pepper or something like that. But it takes all day, you know, all morning to the whole process, cleaning and cooking and then, you know, fixing up the rest of the meal.
You have to go gather the vegetables.
Yeah, and then, that's another thing. You know, if you have greens or something like that, you have to go down, you have to pick them, you have to clean them, you have to wash them off down there because we're limited on the water we have to run. Then she's got to come up and fix them up to cook them, you know, and then cook them. So it's a long process to get a meal ready.
Yes, yes. All fresh.
Yeah. And anyway, so by nighttime, when Butte's run out of things for everybody to do, and it's dark, and they don't read. Now, what she did, she saw Jim and I going through all our books, and we were trying to get rid of as many as we could, you know, so we wouldn't have to. She'd go through and she'd pick out the ones she thought maybe they'd read. Or the ones she'd ask me to pick some out. Well, I don't think they'll read them. But anyway, I got a box full of them. And I got the Virginian. I'm sure you will read that if you ever read anything, because he remembers it. And I got him Shane and a couple others. And I got some for Faye. And she'll never read a thing in her life. You know, she didn't have to.
Really?
Faye, she hates reading. She does her homework up there because she doesn't have TV, and she does it. She sits down, and that's what she does in the evening. And I tell you, that's the biggest affair I've ever seen. It really is funny. She gets on her English, and she wants help, and the whole family helps her. It gets to me the funny. If the teacher knew the kind of help she had, she'd take that into consideration. She's gotten on to something now where the teacher wants pioneer expressions gotten from the Indians or nonsense paragraphs or sentences, you know, these real funny signs. And they work on the grammar. And we got Faye to do, on the nonsense thing, we talked her into doing the Gettysburg Address in pig Latin. And I can't talk it, but I know how you do. You know, you take the first word and put it on relay at the end. And so she wanted her daddy to check it for her. Well, all he can do is talk it. He can't look at pig Latin and read it, you know. But he can say it.
He can talk
it. Yeah. Now, I never got easy with it, but I was like, can you talk pig Latin? It's N-K, Unge, Octe, Igpe, Atenle, you know. And he does it real fast, of course. And Faye just looked at him, you know. And so he tried to read the Gettysburg Address to see if she could put it in pig Latin all right. Well, the next day at school, we asked her how the teacher liked it. We gave her a couple other things like Happy as a Dead Pig in the Sunshine, and Busy as a Bee in a Tar Bucket, and a bunch of others. Nell and you thought those were. And the teacher took the Busy as a Bee in a Tar Bucket, but when Faye read out the first paragraph of the Gettysburg Address and pig Latin, she said the teacher didn't say anything. She just kind of sighed. So, yeah. So everybody helps with their homework. Anyway, but most of the time now
that goes on every night.
Well, not every night, but some nights. Most of the time though, they kind of collapse on the couch, and they have the radio on, and now just sort of. She really does. She just kind of sits with her legs stretched out, and her hands staying down, and she just sort of stares in the space. I guess she's just exhausted by the end of the day.
It's a long day. Every day is a long.
Every day. Because you know? She's got to cope with you, and she's got to get meals ready and plan them, and the stuff together, and fix them, and clean up, and help you. See, she goes, and she's not like me. You know, if Jim's working, I might go see if he needs some help, if I feel in a mood to help him. Nell goes to help you whether she feels in a mood to help him or not, you know. And she'd go down, she'd say, well, she'd get the dishes cleaned up, and I think, well, gee, maybe now she'd sit down and rest a minute or do something she enjoys. She says, well, I'll go down and see if you need any help pulling those nails out. And off she goes.
And he needs some help.
Yeah, he always needs help. And it's too cold, you know, like to go out and sit up in the loft and read or something like that. And they have one overhead light right in smack dab in the middle, you know, just as you come to the door, right, just the exact symmetrical middle of that room. And they have two hanging lamps either end, so you either have to be, you know, right under that light to, you know, have good light to read or work anything, because if you get to one side, you get the shadows against it. And the one on the lamp, on the one wall, is too far from the couch for it to shine over your shoulder and get any light there. So there's no place to read our work except on the kitchen table under the light. You know. Well, Jim, now he didn't do this. The minute he got his job offer, he burned all his application papers. He took every letter he had and just tore them up and then he threw them in the fire. But he would sit there and he'd have all his papers spread out, and there they'd be at the other end of the table with all her books and papers spread out, and there I'd be on the other side, you know, with my book or whatever I'd found. And you and Nellie.
And the radio.
Yeah, the radio. Now, it doesn't bother Faye, for she used to doing homework with the TV on and watching it. But anyway.
You haven't had that long because you weren't in there.
No, that's right. At the trailer, of course, the minute it got dark, everything just quit. You could sit and talk a few minutes, but normally you just went to bed as soon as it got 2 p.m. Yeah, a lantern just doesn't work very well. So Faye she doesn't get home until 4 or 4:15 in the afternoon.
Isn't that awful?
She's got an hour bus ride. At least an hour, if not longer. And she's the first on and the last off every day. And so she'd have to get home, and she'd have to do her homework right away, or it'd be too dark to do it. But now she can wait and do it later on. And she actually stayed up until 11:30 one night doing her homework. Nell said that is the latest she has ever in her entire life stayed up to do schoolwork. It's not duty. She just had to do the next day. That night we helped her with her Pig Latin, and we've gotten all kind of carried away
with that. But Vue doesn't look forward to leaving there.
No. He's happy there. He's completely satisfied. He has no desire even to go over and visit Betty. Now he loves to visit with him. But Jim and I, they hadn't been off the place in, I'd say, about 5 weeks. You know, even both of them at the same time was over there to take a bath or anything like that. Jim and I said, well, we can get Faye off to school in the morning, or you can wait till Friday night when she doesn't have to go to school. And Nell was all for it. She wanted to go over and spend the evening with Betty and Sean, because she likes playing with Scotty and the baby. And you worked it around. He said, yeah, we'll go, But he managed it so that by the time they could get away, it was too late. He kept finding things to do, so they didn't go. And Jim and I will be gone pretty soon. They won't get another chance, because he's not going to leave the place alone. He seems to think that it needs to be protected. Well, it doesn't. Not really. Jim and I went off and left it. The only thing you have to do is let the chickens out. And shut them up. And you can get the wife to do that. But Vue is just... it's his own land, and he's doing things he enjoys doing, and he's not going to leave it. And Uncle Pete and Aunt Vinnie out in Texas says, well, you think your mother and father come visit you? And Jim and I, we both just laughed. I said, there's not a chance in the world Vue is ever going to get off that place. I said, I don't even think he's going to the reunion this Christmas. Because grandmother and grandfather are having their 50th wedding anniversary. All the children have hired a caterer, and they're going to have a real big, fancy dinner. And grandmother's going to wear a long gown.
She'll be sitting there. She's the best looking thing.
Barbara's going to wear one, and they're all going to wear, not formal evening gown, but one of those sort of hostess gowns, the velvet and the quilt and stuff. And Vue's been sort of making it fairly clear that somebody has to stay up there in Georgia. Well, this is just killing Nell, because it's right at Christmas time, the 24th. The 24th. 23rd. So that means that she can go down with Faye, but she's not going to go and leave you alone for Christmas. She's that sort of wife. She's just simply not going to go off and leave him alone for Christmas. It just isn't done. And she doesn't want to do it. But Vue's not going. I bet you anything they can't even want to talk him into that. He really doesn't want to go. As much as he is crazy about grandmother and granddaddy.
And that's Betty, his parents.
Yeah. No, that's Nell's parents.
Nell's
but
parents.
He's real that's fond it. Of them. And he loves them, and he wants to see Uncle Lewis, and he'd like to see Bob and Mary, and he'd like to see Barbara and Bob, and he'd like to see Betty and Charlie, but he wants to see them on his ground. Betty, Barbara and I were thinking, we were wondering, will he go down? Because they don't have to be gone more than, about 4 days. He drive down and stay there, and then they probably go to Cocoa and get a load of stuff, and then come back. But I bet he doesn't go, because he just has no desire to leave that place.
Well, now, that's a great surprise. I figured he'd, as much as he's seen in the world, or at least living in the
centers,
he'd move around, but he's had enough of that, I guess.
Yeah, he never has moved much.
Yeah.
But he would go visit and all. But Nell says that he loves company. Just anybody comes, he just welcomes them, and You know, you can just see him. He's just like her. To them, it's just a real big thrill talking about their place and showing everybody their barn and their chickens and
boundaries. Mail carrier, does he still come?
Yeah, he still comes. And he got you now finally over to his house. He did. You did go visit over the mailman's house because he had a nice place. And they said his walls are plastered with the son's pictures. And every stage of growth is covered with pictures of this boy. But the mailman told me, I saw him one day down the street, he said they only stayed 10 minutes.
So he has. But he likes
it. Yeah. Yeah. So it's.
And the Hobbits don't come very much.
No, they don't come very much. They, the boys still come in spurts.
Yeah.
But they'll go a couple of weeks without seeing any of them. And then they'll go 2 or 3 days, you know, with the boys over there. Now, when we got back, we had been back about 15 minutes, and here came this troop up the hill, all loaded down with armor, and they're going bird hunting. And Dwight was there, he had a little 410, and Kent and Kenneth was there, and he didn't have a gun. And Daryl was there, and he had a little shotgun. Well, Dwight had been over at daybreak that morning, or a little earlier, I guess, and he kind of knocked on the door, and he wanted to know if you wanted to go hunting with him. So you went with him, and they hunted all over the place. And you got his 22, and they started looking for squirrels, and Dwight saw a covey of quail on the ground, and he just, you know, shot at him, and he killed five. And then he shot a squirrel, too, while they're out there, and you get tickled about Dwight. He said he was just as proud as he could be about shooting those quail. And I imagine you enjoyed it, too, because it was 37 that morning when they got up. They have a thermometer right by the kitchen table. They have one on the inside of the window and one on the outside of the window, and they look at it. The minute they get up, and they look at it an hour or two later, and they look at it through the day. But, you know, you went hunting with Dwight, and then he asked...
Okay, just a second.
This
Miles closer.
It's
Clyde.
Oh, yeah.
Howdy. Anyway, when Kenneth came over, Kenneth wanted to know if you wanted to sell one of his rocks.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And you said, well, no, we didn't.
Oh,
really.
By the way,
so Dwight kind of got you off to the side later on that day.
The
kind
that I was telling you about.
He says, I don't think my dad's going to let Kenneth have a rifle yet.
It's
he says, when he gets mad, he just plumb crazy.
Uh-huh.
He likes to kill somebody. So they're not letting kids have a gun yet.
And the thing about it is, if you really want to.
So they just come over like that. And,
yeah.
You know, just off and on.
It's in the
kind of check and see if we need any help or visit a while. Like that.
Well, our school is on. They don't have much time.
Right. See, they get home about 3:09, say around 4 o'clock, and it gets dark pretty early. So, they don't have much time except on the weekend.
I have his program in here when I come get the
stuff. But he's happy to see him. You know, anybody else who comes
thank
over.
You.
And just sort of. I guess the best time that showed it was when he was showing Barb and Bob around because they hadn't seen it before. They just heard about it in letters. And here was his, I wouldn't say favorite daughter, but his oldest daughter, and he just, you know, he's as proud of her as he's in the world.
Yeah.
He's crazy about Bob.
Yeah.
And you could see that he just, you know, going around that place, he talked the whole time.
Oh.
Pointing out this and talking about that. And of course, Barbara, you know, she's got that touch with people. She knows just the right kind of thing to ask you that just sort of sets you up in the air. She just, she can do it, you know. And she doesn't do it deliberately. She just does it. And of course, everything she asks is the right kind of thing. He just gives you another thing you want to talk about. And he just showed us around. We made a round of the fences, you know, as well as other things, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, Suzanne, I don't know all that. I think I just take to that, the radio and all. You know, I noticed one time, I can't quite remember where that was, but I came to one time and I realized that the television was on and had been on, and I hadn't even noticed it. Prudy Gary's or somewhere like that, people that I knew and liked so well, didn't bother me at all. It's partly the people that play it, you see.
Yeah.
And the circumstances.
Yeah.
And
they don't really listen.
One thing or another. Now up there, I bet you I wouldn't even notice that radio. If it's down here, you see, I'd throw a rock at it.
Well, it's on from the time they wake up until they go to bed.
Yeah. But you're not used to that kind of close living.
No, it's...
Eventually.
Yeah, it's for some reason, the closeness to me kind of focuses on you, and he's just... I don't know why. I nailed at the bottom of me, and Faye doesn't bother me, and Jim doesn't bother me, but you bother me.
And builds up.
And it builds up, yeah. And it's been building up. You know? And I thought, well, gee, you know, even out of Texas, I was kind of, you know, come back and be okay. But it's not. You know, I can't be back about 10 minutes before I, you know, just feel jumpy again from being so close. And, you know, it's just, even when I'm up in the loft, you know, you can always hear the voices going down below. That sort of slow, hesitant, thinking it out loud talk. And it just drives me crazy. You know, and the more I think about it, the worse it gets.
Yeah. And the more you say it's not going to bother you,
the more it bothers me. And, of course, the problem is compounded with the fact that I have, you know, I have to sort of tone me down too. I'm not. I use telephone voice most of the time, you know, but around there I must be loud compared to them.
You mean at where?
Up with them.
At Georgia.
Yeah, because Jim says, now your parents, he says, now they don't care if you interrupt them or break in the conversation or make a comment or something. Because you're sort of, their daughter and all, and they expect it, kind of. He said, but my parents, they taught us we weren't ever to interrupt. You know, you just held your tongue until there was a pause in the conversation. Well, there's not too many pauses. You know,
Views
talk is almost constant, you know, with supper or something like that. I mean, it just runs on. You know, it's not. Well, it's a little nervous sometimes, but it's not really nervous, and it's not fast, and it's not anything. It just is sort of slow, and just kind of like, you know. It's kind of like, you know, you just sort of hear it going past your ear all the time. Like the radio. It's just on.
Is that 3 times a day?
Anyway, so.
And when you go up, when they're working up there.
I keep forgetting. I've cried since the beginning of summer because I saw it pretty early that Bu didn't appreciate being broken in on or any suggestions. You know, he does my suggestions exactly, but you have to. He thinks most of mine are pretty cockeyed. What do I know anyway? I'm just a child, you know. And he treats Jim like one sometimes. You know, he's just, he's just the youngest, you know, he's the son, and he's young, and he had never had much responsibility or a job or hadn't done much, so he's still sort of, you know, low man on the totem pole. And so I'm even, you know, I'm just a girl anyway, so, but I forget. And we were, they were putting in the windows, and to me, it's a screwy arrangement, because here you are, the windows are 6 feet off the ground, and he fixed it up. There were windows he salvaged from the shack in the first place, and some from this cabin they had no count. And he'd fixed up the frames and all, and they tacked on the screen. And then you have to go outside and put these dowel rods that he's got rigged up and prop them open. Well, then any time you want to open or shut a window, you have to go outside and get on the ladder to do it. I said, well, what happens, you know, in a rain or something like that? Well, he's got them rigged up. They open out like that from the bottom. So if it rains, it's not going to be much to open. And so that was a, that's one thing. You know, I said, well, what happens if it rains? You know, I asked him dumb questions, and you point out that they wouldn't blow in, you know, because the wind is down this way. Well, you know, okay. But I said, it looked like it might be, you know, I've learned caution a little bit, and I sort of put it in terms of, you know, oh, I don't know much, but it looks like it might work this way. You know, I don't know if it would or not, but if you rigged up the screen so that you could pull them down and tack them or latch them or something, that way you could just put the screen up, open, shut the window, and put the screen back down. Well, I just sort of silence there for a minute, you know. You know, he didn't resent it. He just didn't listen to it, kind of, and he just went on ahead and put up his window. It's just like he wouldn't let me paint those sills. You know, he just didn't quite have that much confidence in my skill and judgment. And Jim is, well, Jim hadn't told me anything about this. I've just seen it. But, I'm used with Jim. If we're going to decide on doing something or how to do something, that, you know, I just talk about it too. You know, and offer my suggestions. It looked like you might be able to do it this way or that way or something like that. And Jim figures, and I figure. And Bugh just, he's used to figuring it himself, and he certainly doesn't need any help from me.
So you get fidgety?
Yeah, I get fidgety. I can't interrupt, and I can't talk about Bubba, because Jim told me I talk about him too much, you know, and I'm not supposed to offer many suggestions, and so at supper, I just kind of sit there and grit my teeth, you know. It's terrible, I'm used to talking all the time, you know, and I'm...
Not being handy.
Yeah.
And you can't, just put in a green light or so?
Well...
So I shouldn't too many.
They can spot them. Now, with other people, I can do it. You know, I can keep things open a little bit without being obvious. But I've talked too much. Yeah, they know too much about you and the tapes and the reporting and everything like that. It doesn't bother Nell. I don't think bothers her. I think she would come in and sit and let you take her. But Bugh's, he's wary of it, and I think he spots it. If I, you know, kind of give a leading, yeah, you know, he kind of shies away from that. He won't go on, and he doesn't do it much anyway. Just that talking, but he knows when I'm listening, and he usually stops. He knows when I'm listening, that's what it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, listening in a special way.
Mm-hmm.
And he can, I don't know, he can listen. It's fine for me to listen to other people, but he don't want any part of it. Makes him nervous.
As a matter of fact, he says that he'd like to talk with some of those people.
Yeah.
That would surprise us.
Well, that's fine. I talked to other people. I just think I didn't listen to him.
That's prevents you again from talking out of tune.
Oh, well, that's what Jim tells me. You talk too much. This is my Marvin. At home, it talks okay. I can talk all I want at my house. You know, I can run off the mouth all day long, and Mom and Dad come by then. You know. But I have to be careful some of the things I say. You know, like throwing in an ain't here and there just killed my mother. You know, the first time I did it, it's like eating butter off your knife. She says, "Zan, you shouldn't do things like that. It's crude." She said, "You shouldn't lull yourself to language like that."
We'll come down this marriage.
Yeah. Well, she had that. That's what I said to
her. Faye is, of course, one of those, because I never quite noticed it, that Suzanne's just a clown. When she's out somewhere else, you know.
You ever seen Suzanne out with her peers?
Yeah. Oh, not only peers, just out.
Everybody.
She's a nut.
Yes.
You should have seen the letter I got from Carol. The one you put you sick on it.
Yeah.
That was, Nell just couldn't wait to ask me what that was about. You know, who was writing asking if I was sick? I said, "I'll give you 3 guesses." This letter from Carol, she said I have no idea whether this letter's gonna reach you or not. I'm sending it to the English department via Dr. Miles, via somebody else, via Timbuktu, and I hope it makes it. And then she said, in part, at the end of part one of our continuing serial, I was leaving the campus with my diploma clutched in my hot little hand. She went on the same thing. So I wrote her a letter back and just wrote it the same way I used to talk to her and Ann, because to them, this whole thing out here was just, you know, it was just comedy the whole time. They knew I'd go up with stuff. And that's the only peers, I don't know, that you can, I could report with, but I had to do it, you know, in a pretty lighthearted way. Anyway, it was funny. So I wrote out a cast of characters up there in Georgia.
Oh,
and
did you?
It really got funny when I started looking at it. It took up a whole page. And there's Bew and Nell and Jim and Faye and me. There was Red, the big dog, and Patches, the neurotic puppy. 35 chickens, 2 kittens and a cat, a horse. And then I put in the neighbors, you know, with a little, like, Douglas and Kenneth and Dwight and Daryl and Dwayne and his mother and watching with a little note out the side of each one of them. But it just, you know, I just kind of like doing it. I think I could probably, if I wrote on the Hobart with Carol in mind, I think I could do it. Yeah.
Right on with me in mind.
I can't do it with you in mind.
They have my favorites already. The whole shebang. Suzanne, are you is it going to be easier for you to stay in gear? I don't know how you're going to stay in gear.
I don't either. It's not particularly. If I had my preference about who's going to keep me in gear, I'd prefer this sort of thing like we did the last time I was down here, that week here. Now, I don't know if I could live with it all summer like Rick. I might get as bad as living in Georgia. But that sort of thing works better, far better than the university does.
Well, it's
but
better
I'm
all summer
something.
Than it is by the week. That
yeah.
week is hectic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you see,
in the summer, you see, I don't even know when he's here.
Yeah.
Oh, that week is awful. I don't look forward to that.
Yeah,
2 weeks would be a whole lot easier than 1
then
week.
Then you wouldn't have to do it, you know.
Yeah.
Do it if you had
such
a little time.
Yeah, but that last time we were here, he just got me all you know, I probably didn't do that much, but I felt like I was working.
Well, you did.
I don't know if I could keep it up 2 weeks at that rate.
Well, you
but
don't
I
want, yes, you don't want to.
But anyway.
Not natural, so.
It's fun.
Well, but, we covered some territory, didn't we?
Yeah, it was fun. That's kind of what I miss, I think. Anyway, like you say, you need the university. And at least there's some sort of, you know, the intellectual side going on. Now, I can't get it from my family. And Mama knows it. She's, you know, I can talk with her, but she realizes that she and Daddy just simply are not enough, you know, for that part.
Well, it's a different time.
Yeah, right. But anyway, with the university there, Dr. Carr gave us some names, you know, at least that way, I hope, you know, it'd be a little easier. Now, if I weren't near a university, I don't know what it'd have. I'm afraid I'd go to seed pretty quick.
You thrive on a course.
Yeah, you know, I gripe about them, and some of them are pretty bad, but they, you know.
I
don't
know how to gripe much about a course.
They're kind of fun.
I was just thinking, you might say, and you've always said that you could get things done when you were geared up like that.
Well, look what happened next.
Not your choice. You have to do it when they say so.
Yeah.
What is it?
I was thinking about last spring, but if you could trust her to consider this writing she's going to do, a course with a deadline, and write.
But
I mean,
tell you, Faye,
set it up that way.
I can't. I don't know about Suzanne, but the sort of thing we've done, if I were just to clear out the whole place and nothing here with me and the cows, I couldn't do it. I've got to keep something going, just the critical side of it, just to keep it going. I don't think a course would do it so much.
No.
But
you don't want too much.
No,
you
just
know, you don't want to be going in too many different directions.
No, just enough tonic, just to tone you up, I think. Just a clash.
Yeah. Well, I think the teaching knows better than you. Than actually taking a class. I mean, if I had my choice, I'd rather do the teaching than the being taught, as far as being geared up.
Yeah. You mean freshman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not much different than, well, it is different. I like it better. I mean, it's harder. You do more, and you know, it seems like your mind works a little more.
I think that's the thing. How to stay in gear. And you see me in gear here, you see, but it takes a great deal to keep me in gear. I depend on a whole lot of things. I don't know. I just hate to think about it. I just sort of get scared when I think of going back to some old country up there. I tell you, the mentality would be so flat, and I wouldn't have. You see. One reason, it's hard to believe, but one reason to talk is, you know, the countryside is better here, I guess, is that it's the center's here, and I don't know, I just don't know why it is.
Well, here you're, you know, you're the university there, and you're part of that, and you're using what's learned out here there, and it just goes back and forth.
Yeah.
So that, like you say, you clash up there, and that sharpens you, and you can hear better and see better out here because you're sort of putting this against that. So you have to look at both of them.
Yeah, just a little of it. Yeah. Well, now I'll tell you, I've had to put so much time on the two courses that I have this term. Well, of course, I'm trying to assimilate some of that reading, and I've carried on other things too. That I haven't even been close to writing. I've written less this fall than I have in, I can't remember when.
And this was before he was going to write, you see.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't work out.
And it's so hard to know where to get into it. I mean, it's all there, but you need something, like you say, to open it up just in your own mind. It's something that, to me anyway, this is a problem I always have. I don't always have it, just at certain times, you know. How do you write the first sentence? Because some let you go on and some just stop you.
It doesn't stop me anymore. I've gotten way past that first sentence business. I don't even have to have a first sentence. I can just start the middle or start the tail end. So I don't chew my pencil anymore. But I don't come to life. It just takes a few things to do it, and you can live around dull people. I'm trying to. It can get you down, but you don't get a lift anywhere. And I think when everybody's paying attention to their own business, they're pretty dull. I see out here we were spoiled because we concentrated on this out here for so long, you see. Everything that went on out here took precedence. We cut out everything except what we were doing. We didn't have to listen to any small talk. Isn't that something? Well, you won't have that anymore. I won't either. I mean,
wouldn't last as a natural thing, but as a study thing, as a thing to look at.
I'll tell you this part. One of the hardest things I ever did was that August the 15th, is just to make up my mind that I was going to surface and leave it. I didn't want to leave it. That's the richest world I ever lived in. One we made out here.
That's right.
I had to do it. And all last year, you see, my focus last year was on that article. Did you read Wade's article from the Life magazine?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now one thing about that is, you see, there's very little about rednecks in that. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly in the hierarchy. He's clashing with his peers with that was the